She was so sublime, super fine. She was never lying, strutting in the heels or her slides. Either way, eyes on her every single day, week, year. Everyone wondering how she does it with no fear. All that confidence, was it heaven sent? Does it come with?
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:59 a.m. Next up is American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler.
So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the source of all protection. Look right now and you will see she's only here by the skin of her teeth as it is. So take heart and take care.
Jacqueline Keeler, and I'd like to welcome you to American Standoff, and we're a show that just premiered this year, and here on KBOO, and we examine the current political divide in America from an Indigenous perspective given by myself, Jacqueline Keeler, a Native journalist based here in Oregon. And our first episode, as you may know, listeners may know, that was on January 6, 2022, the anniversary of the the insurrection, where thousands of supporters of former President Trump stormed the Capitol, contesting President Biden's election. And so, we're familiar with some of these insurrectionists who were marching in our own streets, like the Proud Boys and the Three Percenters. And we're going to discuss them a little bit too today. And we also have seen something similar happen at our own state capitol, which was just a few weeks before on December 21st, 2020, when armed insurrectionists breached our own capitol, actually assisted by former state representative Mike Meerman. And this all occurred in a year that, as reported in the last episode, that Oregon state auditors determined was filled with nationally significant domestic terrorism in our state. And so today on American Standoff, we're discussing what is often called the big lie, right? This is a false narrative pushed by Trump and others in the far right that Trump actually won the 2020 presidential election and that the election was stolen from him, right? So they actually believe that Biden is not the actual president, And so and this is a false narrative. On the show, we examine connections between these really possibly maybe disparate seeming sort of events and things going on, and we're sort of inundated by them. So it can be, you can begin to sort of feel like, there's so much going on. How can I even keep track of it all? This is sort of part of a sort of a psychological attack that Trump has on the general public's mind. And we look at the origins of these things in white supremacy and the DNA of colonialism and how that plays into it, and really try to focus and center the occupation of indigenous homelands that the United States represents, the actual colonial entity of the United States. And so once again, my name is Jacqueline Keeler, and I'm your host, and this is a call-in show. So please do call in. The number here is 503-231. A187. So the insurrectionists, these insurrectionists who stormed the nation's capital on January 6th of 2021 were motivated by this lie, this big lie, and the fallout from that is still happening today. We see it in the news every day. And support of this big lie is not limited to QAnon followers and Trump and his cronies, but also it goes to some of the highest and unexpected levels of our government. You may have all heard the recent reporting on Jimmy Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who has been revealed to also be, in addition to the spouse of a Supreme Court Justice, to be a proponent of the big lie, right? So let's listen to some of the text she sent Mark Meadows, Trump's former chief of staff.
Messages showing the pressure the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas put on the White House to overturn the 2020 election. The text messages from Jenny Thomas obtained by the January 6th Select Committee.
Stop us now!
As it investigates the riot that broke out on Capitol Hill. The committee getting its hands on at least two dozen texts sent between Jenny Thomas and President Trump's then Chief of Staff Mark Meadows in the days after the election. In one, Thomas writing, quote, "Help this great president stand firm, Mark. Biden and the left is attempting the greatest heist of our history." And in another, just days after the 2020 election, Thomas writing, "Do not concede." Other messages show Thomas pushing false conspiracy theories, urging Meadows to tell officials in the West Wing to buck up.
"We're going to walk down to the Capitol."
Thomas attended that rally at the White House before rioters stormed the Capitol on January 6th. But telling the Washington Free Beacon in a recent interview that she got cold and left early. Insisting Clarence doesn't discuss his work with me and I don't involve him in my work. All this coming at a time when Trump was promising to take his efforts to overturn an election he lost all the way to the Supreme Court, where Justice Thomas could weigh in and decide his fate. But the court ultimately rejected those cases.
Okay.
And Kira, the Supreme Court did not respond to repeated questions from ABC News on whether Justice Thomas knew about his wife's activities or why he did not recuse himself from certain.
Okay, so that's the end of the reporting. Sorry, jumped in a little early. Good morning once again. So you were just listening to reporting on Jenny Thomas and her text to Mark Meadows supporting the violent insurrection that happened at the Capitol on over a year ago now. And so I'd like to say good morning again, This is American Standoff. We're a live talk radio show, so please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And I'm Jacqueline Keeler, your host. And I'd like to, I always like to introduce myself in my in the Navajo way, Jacqueline Keeler, Yashiach. My name is Jacqueline Keeler. And in the Navajo way, we also introduce ourselves to our clans. I am both a citizen of the Navajo Nation and defined by my clan. My clan is Nia'ani Nishlif, which is the Towering House people. And I am born for not quite a clan, but my father is Ihaskawan Dakota Yankton Sioux. And so that's how I would introduce myself. And for those who are Dene, my Che's clan is Heshka Azala Yakafruit, and my Chanel is also Yankton Sioux. And I'd also like to acknowledge that what we now call Portland, Oregon, where we are broadcasting, are the ancestral lands of the Multnomah, Wasco, Kalamit, Clackamas, and Cowlitz bands of Chinook, Tualatin, Kayapuya, Malala, and many other tribes. And so I always ask this question with every episode, and as I'm encouraging people to call in, I would like you to think always about what have we learned in the past year since the storming of the Capitol. It's been more than a year now, January 6, 2021. What have we learned, and what has been revealed to us about America, about how it runs, how it works? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. So today we're discussing Donald Trump's big lie and conspiracy theories it spawns, and the widespread bitterness it spreads, even in local populations beyond 2020. We are also looking at its impact nationally on voting access, particularly for Black, Indigenous people of color voters. Across the country, Republican candidates are spending money on ads and throwing doubt on the legitimacy of elections to motivate their base, to bring it up, bring them out. And even nonpartisan city council races are now heavily impacted by this national division. And as Alina Schneider recently wrote in Politico, reporting on the local races in Green Bay, Wisconsin, it's all, quote, an example of how Trump's conspiracy theories have torn apart faith in government from Washington, D.C. down to the local level. And some of you may be seeing this in your own local races. Please do call in and let us know what you are seeing and how you are concerned, and maybe some ideas of what we could do about it. We just heard the coverage about Justice Clarence Thomas's wife, Ginny Thomas, and her text supporting the January 6th insurrection. There was a recent poll released, a Quinnipiac poll, which showed that 52% of Americans say Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas should recuse himself from cases related to the 2020 election. They polled 1,436 U.S. adults between March 31st and April 4th via telephone. So the report says that the slight majority of Americans that say Thomas should recuse himself includes 79% Democrats, 53% Independents, and 28% Republicans. So almost 80% of all Democrats feel that Clarence Thomas should recuse himself. 53% just the slight majority of Independents, 53%. And 28% of Republicans, which is less than a third of Republicans, think that he should recuse himself. And overall, 39% say Thomas should not recuse himself, with 9% unsure. And respondents to the survey were told that it's been reported that Ginny Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, communicated with President Donald Trump's chief of staff, former President Trump's chief of staff, urging him to pursue efforts to overturn Joe Biden's 2020 election. And so the question is his wife's political activism a potential conflict of interest in Thomas's work? We have a caller, Dr. Freddie.
Good morning. I was listening to your comments, and all I wanted to say was Ginny Thomas does what she does, and I don't think Clarence has a lot to do with that. Maybe he does. I don't know. But the whole thing I'm saying is you can't really tell your spouse what they're thinking, how to act. That's insane. What they did on January 6th, that's called insurrection, and that they all should be in jail, including her. okay? And as far as I'm concerned, nothing has happened to that capital since the 1700s. That is horrible. And if that had been people of color, they'd been under the jail, and that blood would still be running down Pennsylvania Avenue. And that's all I want to say. Sometimes in America, racism is so blatant, so obvious, that if you're white and rich, you're right. Have a good day. God bless.
Thank you, Dr. Freddie, and I totally agree that if the insurrections have been Black Lives Matter, you know, supporters, there would have been a really different response from law enforcement from the get-go. And certainly, as I mentioned in the last episode, I'd heard the same thing from Burns Paiute Tribal Council members who were like, if we had taken over the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, which used to be part of their reservation and it is their homeland, they would have been shot. That was their take, unlike what happened to Ammon Bundy, who was able to come and go and leave and stay, you know, with no one stopping him. And so, whether or not a spouse can impact someone else, I would like to hear more discussion on that, actually. My feeling is that I can't see how it would not, especially since he did not recuse himself from a Supreme Court vote about whether to release certain White House records, which might have included his wife's text, which would be a real breach. I think if she's involved with something like that, she must know that but it would be very contentious and to basically try to overthrow the government. So in these text messages, as you heard in the audio recording, between Virginia, Jimmy Thomas, and then White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, which was obtained by the House Select Committee tasked with investigating the January 6th riot, Thomas regularly checked in with Meadows to encourage him to push claims of voter fraud and work to prevent the election from being certified. So this is pretty extraordinary, you know, and I agree with Dr. Foggy that all these people should be in jail. I mean, I think it's pretty clear, and yet they're still all out enjoying themselves. I think some of Trump's former staffers are like were at a party recently, you know, at his estate in Florida, just having a great time. That wouldn't be the case if they were people of color. And I agree with Dr. Freddie that sometimes the racism is so obvious, right? Thomas wrote to Meadows on November 10th, 2020, saying, "Help this great president stand firm, Mark. You are the leader with him who is standing for America's constitutional governance at the precipice." Okay. The majority knows Biden, the left, is attempting the greatest heist of our history. And she capitalizes heist and history. That's interesting. She became increasingly frustrated by the lack of progress in an attempt to find a path to overturn the results of the election, right? And so she said on November 24th, 2020, "I can't see Americans swallowing obvious fraud, just going with one more thing with no frickin' consequences. The whole coup and now this. We just cave to people wanting Biden to be anointed. Many of us can't continue the GOP charade." I mean, when you read these actual texts, is it reasonable to you that she was not talking to her husband about these things? And, I mean, if it was so tearing her apart, would she not confide in her husband? I don't understand. I mean, referring to an actual election as a coup, but the insurrection as it's fixed. You can see how this big lie really does feed into the erosion of democracy in this country and civil society. So she previously revealed she attended the pro-Trump rally, but she claims she played no role. And so the Kinnipack poll also showed that 40% think that Jenny Thomas's political activity poses an ethical problem for her husband. In a mostly party line split, 75% of Democrats call it an ethical problem, while 61% of Republicans say it is not one. So there's a real, once again, the name of the show is American Standoff, and you can see that this very difficult standoff is expressed in many ways in this country right now. And it's actually measurable. We can actually measure that standoff and how it works, how it plays out in our society today. So, and how it impacts even the Supreme Court in this case. So he did not, Justice Thomas did not recuse himself from a case, as I mentioned earlier, involving White House January 6 records when the Supreme Court considered it this year. He was, I think, the only justice to rule against releasing those records, which looks pretty suspicious. You know, he refused to comment on it, so we don't know what his thinking was. And I think a lot of the reporting, if you've been listening, is that there is really no ethics oversight over the Supreme Court, unlike other judicial positions. And so it's really up to them to police themselves. And I think there's been discussion about changing that. Once again, today we are discussing Trump's big lie. As this is American Standoff, and I'm Jacqueline Keeler. Please call in if you want to be part of this conversation. Our studio number is 503-231-8187. And in addition to the furor over Jeannie Thomas texting pro-big lie support to Mark Meadows, the House has voted to recommend criminal contempt of Congress charges against former Trump aides Peter Navarro and Dan Scavino Jr. after the pair defied subpoenas from the special committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. And as I mentioned, this whole thing is kind of hard to follow because we're constantly inundated with all of these things happening, and yet we're not seeing resolution. And so it becomes, I find it some difficult to invest myself in following each individual story. But I think it's really important to look at the spread of activity that's going on around the big lie, both in propagating it, and in holding those who are spreading these false claims accountable. So a contempt of Congress charge carries a penalty of up to 1 year in jail and a maximum fine of $100,000. And so let's listen to some of the audio about their case, the Trump aides found in contempt of Congress.
If 90% of success in life is just showing up, then 90% of acting in contempt of Congress is not showing up. The rest of contempt is not turning over documents you have been ordered to produce and acting with open disregard and scorn for the rule of law, Congress, and representatives of the American people.
The election claims made by Donald Trump were so frivolous and so unfounded that the president's lead lawyer did not just lose these cases. He lost his license to practice law.
Just moments after we heard from members of the January 6th committee, the House voted to refer former Trump aides Peter Navarro and Dan Scavino to the Justice Department for criminal contempt of Congress. The only Republicans to vote in favor were Representatives Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, who, of course, are both on the committee.
Okay, so you just heard audio there of the House vote, which basically referred the matter to the Justice Department in finding these two in contempt of Congress, former Trump aides Peter Navarro and Dan Scavino Jr. And the committee says that Navarro worked with Stephen K. Bannon, remember Bannon from back in the day, to carry out a plan to delay Congress' certification of the election on January 6, 2021, while Scavino had worked with Trump to spread false information via social media regarding election fraud and had recruited a crowd to Washington on January 6th. This sounds like very direct involvement to me. I mean, yeah, that's very interesting. And they're refusing to come and testify and speak to Congress. So Navarro also wrote a report alleging a stolen election, which was widely shared with others working to overturn the election. And the committee accused Scavino of having foreknowledge of the potential for violence on the day of the riot. The recommendations come as the Washington Post reports that U.S. District Judge Trevor N. McFadden has found Matthew Martin, a former Energy Department contract engineer, not guilty of trespassing and disorderly conduct, the first acquittal delivered in a capital breach prosecution. So, I would like to encourage you all again to call in. What do you think? How do you think the January 6th committee is doing on this? Are they doing a good job holding folks accountable? What do you think of this latest evidence? Scavino or Navarro actually writing this report that lays out the big lie and gives it credence by releasing it from the White House itself. And let me know what you think. Once again, the number here is 503-231-8187. And one of the things I'd like to ask is revisiting what we saw, what we covered last a couple of weeks ago about Greater Idaho and the support for it. I'd like to know, and I think we played this audio before, and I think the last bit of it was cut off, but how does the big lie play locally here in Oregon, right? So let's revisit, listen again to a local television interview asking Oregon Republican candidates for governor what they think of the big lie.
Let's not forget the takeover of the U.S. Capitol building on January 6th of 2020. It was a mob supporting President Trump who took it over. Many were there motivated by the lie the former president is still pushing that the election was stolen from him. It's not true, but some still believe it. Which brings us to Oregon Republican candidates for governor. We're asking them that simple question. Did President Trump have the last election stolen from him? Again, the factual answer is no, but it is tricky for some who don't want to turn off the hardcore Republican base here in Oregon, which clings to that false belief. And some cling to that belief themselves. Bob Tiernan is up first.
Do I think President Trump lost the election? Yeah, I think he lost the election. And I think it was a combination of reasons. And I have no doubt there was fraud. I have no doubt there was some bureaucratic bumbling. I had no doubt with over 3,000 counties counting ballots and you know, some dead people probably voting. But do I think it was enough to overturn the election? I don't.
Next, let's hear from Bridget Barton, who I think is trying to live in the middle on this question.
I don't know, and neither do you, and neither does anyone out there. And that is why we're in the state that we're in right now in this country, where people are just at each other's throats. We are in a situation where people literally don't know the answer to that. And that can't continue. How is any voter supposed to know? How would you know? Can you categorically say you know?
Have you heard of the Electoral College?
I know what the vote count was going through. I'm not denying what the vote count is. And I'm not denying who's sitting in the Oval Office. And that's the way it is, and that's the way it's going to be.
Finally, Sandy Mayor Stan Pulliam, who is a believer.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely believe that the last election was fraudulent. When you look around the country and you see states moving to vote by mail at the very last second, I believe Pennsylvania a couple of weeks ago, their Supreme Court even said that it was unconstitutional because it sidestepped the requirement for in-person voting. You talk about high tech and the ciphering of information that the American public was able to see. Just this last week, we were talking about Hunter Biden. All of a sudden, the New York Times did an article talking about substantiating the laptop and that issue. This was news and information that was not allowed for the American public to see during the election. So I absolutely do find the last election to be fraudulent.
Okay, so there you heard sort of the response to the question, what do you think of the big lie of some of the three candidates, Republican candidates for governor of Oregon? And you can see the spread there. The more traditional Republican, I guess, is like not buying it, but at the same time, he's sort of leaving the door open to a certain extent. And I think we've seen a lot of Republican candidates like this be thrown aside by Republican voters lately, whether you're looking at Liz Cheney in Wyoming even former Republican Montana governor, who is now being called a rhino, right? He was very popular in the 90s. Rhino being a Republican in name only. And so, and then of course, the second, the whole spread to the guy at the end, who's just completely buying the whole thing, right? Buying the Kool-Aid. And so, once again, I'd like to thank you for listening and encourage you to call in. And so what do you think of these candidates? Do you think a Republican could win a majority of Republican voters in their district if they don't embrace Trump's big lie? Is it possible? We look at the polling, which shows that a majority of Republican voters still believe in the big lie today, a year and a quarter later. What does that say about the state of democracy here in Oregon and elsewhere? How does that impact? What do you think will happen? Will we have some sort of violent incident again? Especially considering the Secretary of State, the auditor report that came out last week showing that Oregon had the most number of domestic terrorist activities going on in the state, in the country, of any state. I think the second one was New York State. So do you think something is going to happen in our own state? Once again, this is Jacqueline Keeler. This is American Standoff. Please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And if you're just tuning in, we are discussing Trump's big lie and how it will impact voting rights, and particularly Black and Indigenous people of color voters. We thought that we had, with Trump out of office, we could take a collective sigh of relief and move on back to something more normal. But, you know, Trump's endorsement is still highly valued in the 2022 elections. And he is still sort of, I don't know what you think, but you can call in and let me know what you think. But I think that he's still a pretty viable candidate for 2024 for the Republican Party, right? And so let's take a look at one of Trump's candidates that he has endorsed, right? He's also amassed a pretty large war chest. I think the last number I saw was $110 million. And so he is able to be a kingmaker in many races. He's been he's only endorsed a handful of candidates, but this Christina Caramo, I don't know if you've heard of her before. She is running for Secretary of State of Michigan, right? She is, so I can tell, a Black woman. She is a conservative and a Christian. She became famous in the right-wing world when she falsely claimed that the former president was a true victor in Michigan in 2020 and spread conspiracy theories that left-wing anarchists were behind the January 6th attack on the Capitol. And so this is the person that Trump is endorsing. And he actually flew out there this weekend to go and endorse her in person. But let's listen to some audio of we have a caller. Alan?
Okay, hi. Well, hi. I'm curious about the other big lie, which would be Biden, which claimed to be everything opposite of Trump, and yet, what, is there any evidence? But let's just stay with Trump for a second. The thing I found interesting was out of the three, the one woman who was asked the question about did Trump win the election or was it stolen or whatever, and she said, I honestly don't know, and none of us know, and I think that she's actually right. I don't know if she's trying to evade the question or not, but I think she's correct in the fact that I don't personally know. I don't have access to the machines or that. You know what I'm getting at? And I've heard, actually, stories that John F. Kennedy somehow stole the election. But it's funny. This whole Trump phenomenon is fascinating in the fact that... first of all, I was really surprised, let's put it that way, Trump supposedly won the 2016 election, weren't you? Just shocked to your shoes, your socks. What? Okay, but that's what they said, so all right. Now, what I'm saying is that in that election, I only saw a bumper sticker on a car. One. And that was extremely strange, I thought, because usually when people are somebody like Nixon or whoever, they're all over the place, right? And you usually have, you know, a fair number of both on lots of different cars. But and also only one Trump sign in a yard. And at one point I almost went up and just said, hey, what is it about this guy? Is it the fact that he likes to rape people? Or is it a shabby businessman, fakes threatens bankruptcy. The mob isn't exactly, you know, but I just wasn't that brave, I guess, or that interested that day. But isn't that fascinating? People wanted, supposedly wanted this guy, and nobody would actually admit it. What kind of loyalty or what kind of anything is that? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's yeah. I mean, I would So Bridget Barton was the governor, the Republican candidate who refused to really answer the question straightforwardly.
Yeah.
And she's worked to, she was a writer, publisher, and consultant. She helped fund the campaign to defeat liberals in school board races in suburban districts, including Sherwood. And she's raised about $708,000. And so she's been part of a group of well-known, but a small but influential group of prominent conservatives who published a magazine called Brainstorm Northwest. And and so she's part of the she's the architect of the Oregon Transformation Project, which elects in Clackamas County elects conservatives to leadership roles, and
can I mention a word, just because we use terms like right and left and conservative or progressive, but or others, but I have a 90-year-old client, and she asked me once. Aren't conservatives supposed to be into conservation?
Oh yeah, that's a different thing. Yeah, I don't know what those things mean anymore, really. But yeah, it's more about those people who support traditional, what you would consider traditional, sort of pre-civil rights era sort of social systems. I mean, it's
hierarchical. Me first. You know. Yeah, I know.
In my book, Standoff, I go into a lot of detail and sort of how the origin story of Americans as colonists, right, particularly white Americans. I'm speaking primarily about white Americans as colonists. That there is in the colonial story, there is implicit certain assumptions, and those assumptions are like. I call them, they're like algorithms, right? They are directives. And those directives and shape them as a people, right? And I think that the colonial origin story and its DNA, right, is the issue here. And this is what they are fighting for. But it's also an incredibly destructive sort of...
Well, listen, even just to what we heard in school was that the people in the Mayflower came over to escape religious persecution. And then, what did they do? They religiously persecuted all the people that were originally here and loved the place.
Yeah, they weren't about religious freedom. They were about their particular...
Oh, and you get it. It's just like, if that was,
was
good, then why didn't you come and share that with everybody you met?
Yeah, my book, Stand Up, I go into a lot of the detail about these original sort of... I really look more at Jamestown as people like to look at the Pilgrims because of the religious component. But I think Jamestown and the corporate model is a far more accurate model to understand what was going on. And even with the Pilgrims, the Mayflower Compact was basically a business compact. It was only you could only sign it if you were an investor, right? So a lot of the models that we have in the United States, like some of the original colonies, were started as corporations that were given governmental powers by the English Crown. Over homelands that did not belong to them, and the goal was profit, right? I mean, when I went to Jamestown to do research for my book, I found they have stories about how English people who came to work for the company there, it was called the Virginia Company of Adventures in London, right? And if they weren't working hard enough, they would actually shackle them to their beds, right? I mean, it's so it was all about profit. And so this is,
I come from Eastern, European background and such. We're French and German and this and British, and that's it. All I'm getting is that when I heard that my father's side was like they escaped Alsace-Lorraine, which is right on the border of Germany, because of religious persecution. And my My mother's German, Norwegian side came from the exact opposite other province in Germany because of religious persecution. one against the Catholics, one against Protestants. But so, hey, I'm the product of that. Let's just bring it to the now. Like that guy that was expelled from the Senate, or the it was the Salem down in Salem. He helped people get in. They disrobed him, or whatever, right? Disbarred him. What he did. Mm-hmm. Why isn't he sitting in jail or prison? Wasn't that a really bad thing he did? Like,
you would think, yeah. I mean,
if I tried to do that, hey, you want to go down and try to do it? No.
Yeah, I know. That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. It's just strange. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's like a slap on the wrist. Okay.
Thank you. So, thank you for calling in, both my callers, and I do urge other people to call in. It's always really enjoyable to hear your point of view and to me your history too. I mean, I think the number here is 503-231-8187, and once again, we're discussing Trump and his big lie and how it could impact the elections coming up. We've been talking about Christina Caramo. She is the candidate Donald Trump is backing for Michigan's next Secretary of State. And why is Trump focused on who is Secretary of State of Michigan, right? And it's because that is a position that if one of his supporters were elected to, they could be in the position to certify election results that he does not like. So let's listen to that audio now of Trump and Christina Caramo.
Is Christina Caramo your next Michigan Secretary of State? And I say your because my responsibility is to serve the people of Michigan, irrespective of political affiliation, irrespective of any other office or any other thing. You know, the current office holder, whose name I won't even say, she's not even a Democrat. She's an authoritarian leftist who treats the people of Michigan like the unwashed masses. Who does this woman think she is that the people of Michigan don't have the right to question her? Who does this woman think she is that the people of Michigan don't have the right to scrutinize the election process? That is what happens when you have people in government who do not know and do not care about the state or the U.S. Constitution. Last time I checked, according to my First Amendment rights, I have the right to redress my grievances to my government without being called an insurrectionist, without being called a big life opponent. Educator, and I went to theology school earning my master's in Christian apologetics because fundamentally the problems in our nation are spiritual. That's the reality that we're dealing with. But even with that being said, being politically active was always important to me. And what I witnessed during the 2020 election, and what I witnessed is the media cover-up that sought to demonize citizens who came forward to tell the truth. Let me tell you something, folks. The reason why we have so much corruption in government, because of our corrupt media, who instead of honoring the First Amendment right, which is freedom of the press,
so once again, that was the Trump-endorsed candidate, Christina Caramo, who is running for Secretary of State of Michigan. And as I mentioned earlier, it's a position that Trump, is very interested in because it could really give him control of the election by kind of ordering his follower to who's in that position to not certify an election he doesn't agree with. This is a really quite troubling extension of power. Right. And if you get these people in positions of power like that, he will have de facto power over our elections. To an extent that I can't recall any other former president possessing. Let me know if I'm wrong about that. Please do call in. Once again, this is American Standoff, and we're talking about Trump's big lie and how it's impacting politics today in the United States. And the number is 503-231-8187. And so Christina Caramo has falsely claimed that President Trump is the true victor in Michigan in 2020. And she's also claimed that that it's actually Antifa that was actually responsible for the January 6th attack on the Capitol. So for these, and she is also, I believe, a black woman, and this is how she's gained a huge, massive right-wing following because of her statements like this. From a recent article in The Guardian, and I mentioned earlier that Trump had visited Michigan just this past weekend to support Christina Caramo's candidacy in person. So she describes herself as a defender of the Christian faith, and she opposes teaching evolution in public schools, which she calls government indoctrination camps. She argues that Americans live in poverty because they just make dumb decisions. And she contends the instigators of the January 6th insurrection, as I mentioned before, were, quote, totally Antifa posing as Trump supporters. Yeah. So I don't know. It's sort of it's pretty strange how Trump and his followers can go, for one hand, completely advocating for this this insurrection, as seen at the top of the hour when we talked about Ginny Thomas's text to Mark Meadows. It's pretty evident that they were for this, that they were calling for it. Trump's own, staff were issuing, press releases explaining this was a takeover, encouraging it. Now they can also flip flop and say, oh, it's actually, Antifa people doing this and making us look bad, right? And so Trump traveled 1,200 miles from Mar-a-Lago, Florida, to Michigan to support Caramo. And this is her first office she's running for. The chief elections, this position, Secretary of State, is the chief elections officer in Michigan, and which is a pretty powerful position to have, even in the United States, right? In 2016 and 2020, Michigan was pivotal in securing the White House for Trump and Biden in 2020. And so Trump described her as, when he endorsed her in September, that she is strong on crime, he said, including the massive crime of election fraud, right? Here's someone who's running on the big lie, but is denying that the insurrection was actually carried out by people believing in the big lie. That's a real interesting leap. She became famous because she was in 2020. She was observing the vote counting in the largely African American city of Detroit, and it all began, I understand, with a misunderstanding. She alleged she was at a center in downtown Detroit where poll workers were counting 174,000 absentee ballots. And she was one of many Trump supporters who, without any formal training in election procedures or laws, had designated themselves as poll challengers, watching over the politically charged count. And so one of the things that has happened as well is that there is this huge increase in people wanting to be poll watchers, right? And you might want to check with your own precinct to see if they've experienced a huge bump in people wanting to be poll watchers. And you might want to go watch them and see what they do, right? They might be a minority in your community, in your voting base, but they can also cause a lot of trouble. And so in this case, she's been calling for a forensic audit of the 2020 presidential election, yet exist as a term in Michigan. The convention, so she claimed that she saw, that she personally witnessed fraudulent activity in which ballots were switched illegally from Trump to Biden. And then she filled out an incident report. So the three-page document looks like an official police report, but in small print at the bottom, it says paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Incorporated, an interesting thing. And so she claims that she saw a ballot on the screen in which a voter appeared to have cast, for both parties. And you can't vote for more than one party, one more presidential candidate at a time. And so she said that she claimed she heard the supervisor instructed the poll worker to push it through, where and so she interpreted that meaning as they were just going to allow the ballot to be counted, but that was actually incorrect. She didn't understand the terminology, right? And Chris Thomas, Michigan's former director of election who oversaw the state vote count for 36 years under both Republican and Democratic administrations, explained that push it through, she thought it meant to give the vote to Biden, but in fact, push it through means that that they would discard the ballot, actually. And so it's the ballot would have been discarded because it was an overvote. And so I mean, he says push it through means you are done with it and the vote is tabulated as a non-count. So she completely mistook. She didn't understand what was going on, and she refused to listen to any explanations then. And now she's running on this thing in order to become, to oversee the elections in Michigan. So I think that is, yeah. So anyway, Sean Hannity has billed her as a whistleblower on his on Fox News. And she was invited by Republicans to testify before a legislative committee. She participated in a four-state lawsuit seeking to overturn the presidential election that went all the way to the Supreme Court, which rejected it quickly. And so she is running with his backing, with Trump's backing, and she has amassed a campaign war chest of more than $228,000, more than any other Republican vying for the Secretary of State nomination. She has attracted more than 2,000 individual donors, more than all candidates combined in the last Secretary of State contest in 2018. So it's pretty scary. I mean, and this is just one case that we are looking at right now. This is happening across the country. Election positions are really being targeted this way. And Steve Bannon has really been the mastermind behind rolling this initiative out nationally to get folks to, you know, to basically take over the election system. And so the whole push of the, particularly the Capitol insurrection on January 6th, was to get Pence to refuse to certify the electoral votes. And so they're still pushing this. This is still their main focus. And it's something that all Americans should be very aware of and monitor what they're doing and be aware of it. So that's what's happening with Caramo. She also spoke in October at a QAnon convention in Las Vegas, where she joined other pro-Trump big white candidates running for Secretary of State positions across the country. So at the QAnon convention, you might think of QAnon as this kind of silly thing that happened and a bunch of people fell into this rabbit hole of ideas, but they have a convention in Las Vegas in October, and they have a whole bunch of candidates coming who are running for office. And so it is a serious issue, and it could really change sort of how, even after we voted, how the vote is treated, right? And really muck up the courts and just cost us a lot of money as well. She's been appealing to QAnon as well for support and attention. So this could be quite an issue. I would like to encourage you all once again to call into the studio. What do you think of this? Are you concerned about this whole push, this whole kind of, I think it's been called election precinct strategy by Steve Bannon to gain control, to have the final say about whether these votes would be actually accepted in the final count. And in addition to all the other policies that Republicans have been rolling out in state legislatures to prevent people of color in particular from voting. And we'll go into a little bit of that soon. Once again, the number here is 503-231-8187. And actually, we're almost down to the last 7 minutes, and I haven't gotten through my whole thing. So let's see. The next one of the things I wanted to talk about was some positive things, which is pushback. Like, what is being done about this, right? And so let's listen to some audio of a recent ruling that a judge gave on a Florida voter suppression bill.
There's bad news for Governor Ron DeSantis and his fellow Republicans trying to suppress the vote in Florida. A federal judge blocked the state from enforcing most of the measures in its voter suppression law. What's even more remarkable is the judge's blistering critique of the law, Senate Bill 90, and what can only be described as a scorched earth ruling. Across 288 pages, federal judge Mark Walker notes Florida's grotesque history of racial discrimination. He says the plaintiffs in the case allege the law runs roughshod over the right to vote, unnecessarily making voting harder for all eligible Floridians, unduly burdening disabled voters, and intentionally targeting minority voters, all to improve the electoral prospects of the party in power. The party in power in Ron DeSantis' Florida is, of course, also known as the Republican Party. Judge Walker points out that the court reviewed thousands of pages of evidence, thousands more pages of briefing, and has heard 2 weeks worth of testimony from 42 witnesses. He then concludes, this court finds that, for the most part, plaintiffs are right. Mincing no words, Judge Walker says, this court recognizes that the right to vote and the Voting Rights Act particularly are under siege. In the final pages of his lengthy ruling, Judge Walker wrote, in Florida, white Floridians outpace black Floridians in almost every socioeconomic metric. In Florida, since the end of the Civil War, politicians have attacked the political rights of black citizens. In Florida, though we have come far, the realistic fact is that we still have a long, long way to go. And if that last line sounds familiar, he's quoting Martin Luther King Jr., who said in a 1967 interview, some of the old optimism was a little superficial, and now it must be tempered with a solid realism.
So this is reporting on the recent ruling blocking racist voting laws in Florida. And that came out March 31st, a few weeks ago, or actually just a week ago. I'm getting ahead of myself here. And he permanently blocked them, and which will go into effect actually today on Thursday. And the U.S. District Judge Mark Walker blocked three major components of this bill because they suppressed black voters. Right, it included a requirement that third-party voter registration drives include warnings, such as telling voters their registrations might not be done in time to vote. Also, new limits on ballot drop boxes, which included confining them to early voting hours unless they are in a supervisor's office and requiring them to be guarded at all times. And a new law criminalizing the act of helping voters in line, even if it's something as simple as handing out water or snacks. And in many locations, in Florida included, black voters in and people of color who are in districts that are primarily with people of color in them have much longer waiting lines to vote. And there's been an active, the Republican Party has worked to reduce the number of polling sites in neighborhoods where they don't want people voting. And so take time off of work. We're still one of the few countries in the world where Election Day is not a holiday. And it's on a Tuesday as well. And so people have to stand all day, sometimes in line for hours, waiting to vote. And they actually criminalize people helping folks who are, they've been put in this position as part of the strategy to prevent them to vote. And they don't even want people helping them. So he also put the state back into pre-clearance status under the Voting Rights Act, which is great news. The pre-clearance, I don't know if you're familiar with this aspect of the Voting Rights Act, but it required certain states that had a history of suppressing, racially suppressing the vote, to have to go through pre-clearance when they made any changes, to their voting districts or any laws like this, because pre-clearance would require it to go through a federal sort of process. And so he put Florida back into the Voting Rights Act, and that really needs to be reestablished again. So he because he says that Florida has repeatedly, recently, and persistently acted to deny Black Floridians access to the franchise. And so Florida will have to obtain federal approval before passing new laws related to those three issues. And he called it Senate Bill 90, which was signed into law by Governor Ron DeSantis earlier this year, was part of a 2 decades of incremental attacks on voting rights. And he felt that racism was the motivating factor in SB 90's adoption. And he says, at some point when the Florida legislature passes law after law disproportionately burdening Black voters, this court can no longer accept that the effect is incidental. Based on this indisputable pattern set above, the court finds that in the past 20 years, Florida has repeatedly sought to make voting tougher for Black voters because of their propensity to favor Democratic candidates. So he also slammed the Supreme Court for gutting the Voting Rights Act and bringing that back to Clarence Thomas again, who voted to do so, and losing the spirit that spurred its passage. So, so this is we're at the end of the show right now, and I'd like to thank you all for calling in and listening. And yeah, I think it's really important we have this conversation about these things. Lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your attitude? Are you here to improve or damage?
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m.
Welcome to Bookwaves. I'm Richard Walensky. 6 years ago, I had a chance to interview filmmaker and author Miranda Joel.